traffic today. Welcome to Night Search. This is May 18, 2013. I'm Eddie Middleton in Memphis, and co-hosting up in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee, is Justin Abner, and our guest tonight is John Kettler. And I'm going to let Justin introduce our guest tonight.
Yes, good evening, all. Our guest tonight is John Kettler. He is a former military defense analyst. He worked a lot with aerospace. After moving on from that, he became a researcher, writer, and investigator. He investigates many topics, including black ops, alternative sciences, UFOs, ETs, hidden history, and exotic technology, and much more. John Kettler has appeared on many television and radio shows and has written several books. Mr. Kettler is known, however, for his primary research in the Oscar-nominated documentary, The Panama Deception. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Thanks,
small correction. I don't have any fees. Pardon?
You've been a guest a couple of times on our show, and it's always absolutely riveting. So,
well, thank you, Eddie. I was starting to make a small correction. I've never been on any television shows other than inadvertently appearing on national news back when Exorcist was out. But
okay.
Another story for another time. I've done a bunch of radio shows and internet radio programs. So.
Yeah.
Just
have you ever been on Coast to Coast? I'm just curious. Have you ever been on Coast to Coast?
No. It was one up the flagpole. I didn't get any direct response. I pinged several of them. The word I got back, though, through my own contacts was I was a bit too out there even for their taste, which is saying a lot. But I think time is going to show that I'm not as out there as people thought I was. The evidence that I really do know what I'm talking about is starting to show up, and we can talk about that here in a minute.
Yeah, I like to say that we have guests that Coast to Coast has never had on or maybe even never heard of, but they're the most interesting guests that are out there. And I think you're certainly in that category. And
well, thank you.
And I find you very credible, and your information is definitely mind-stretching. And whether someone chooses to believe it or not, well, still they can't help but be totally enthralled with your reports. And a lot to think about there. And if they have the questions, they can do some research on their own, right?
Well, yes, there are things that are checkable. There are other things where basically they're going to have to go deep within and feel into the thing and follow where the threads lead. Some of your listeners will have their own abilities to, shall we say, operate astrally, to do telepathic or intuitive communication, things like that. I'm not the only person with these abilities by any means. In fact, sometimes when I put some of these posts up, I've got multiple people saying, oh, yeah, I did something like that, or I saw something like that, or I had a very similar experience. Well, the difference between me and them is I'm a lot more public about my experiences.
Well, another thing, you have a tremendous asset and resources of contacts and inside information. I know you speak of the Liberation Forces, and you can talk about them too tonight. But your information has the ring of authenticity. Just put it that way.
Well, thank you. I try. I do everything I humanly can to make sure I'm not being sold a bill of goods by somebody. In that regard, it helps to have some of the abilities that I have. It helps to have several different kinds of contacts. But ultimately, you just got to go with what feels right. You look at the evidence and everything, and you weigh it, but ultimately, you have to go with your gut if you're smart. Every time I don't go with my gut, every time I don't go with what feels right, I wind up with egg on my face.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, just to start off, what's foremost in your mind right now happening in the world that you'd like to address and share information on?
Well, I would say it's what I put up yesterday, which is to say that somebody put up a video, J-C-A-T-T-E-R-A, put up a video on YouTube. It was ostensibly connected with Nibiru or something of that nature, but it was sent to a ground contingent, which is to say somebody on this planet or several somebodies on this planet who are dealing directly with the liberation forces, which are the forces working to free us from the multiple enslavements that we're under on this planet, the suppression of knowledge, the suppression of growth and development, the destruction of the environment, all that stuff. You know, that's their agenda. So there are forces working to change that, and they're called the liberation forces. There are other groups out there, too, but these are the ones that I deal with and have been chronicling, I would say, exclusively since I got into doing some of this. It's kind of like I started doing one thing. I was writing about unicorns and other things. Oh, by the way, there is good evidence they existed, at least in some form. But then next thing I know, I find myself off in the world of extraterrestrials, extra-dimensionals, and all kinds of other wild stuff. But the significance of what I put up yesterday is this. The video was shot at Neumeier Station 3, which is in, interestingly enough, a part of Antarctica that formerly was claimed by the Third Reich, circa 1937, when they sent an expedition up there. And they were dropping weighted poles with swastikas on the tips. They claimed this huge area of Antarctica, and that gets into the secret Antarctic base scenario and things like that. Well, it wound up later on in, I want to say, Norwegian hands, and they called it Droning Maudland. Well, that's where Neumeier Station 3 is located. It's on a big ice sheet that will eventually be up by the ocean, but for the time being, it's an Antarctic research station. It apparently has an automatic camera, which runs in time lapse. And if somebody got his or her hot little hands on the footage, and you could see something that quite clearly is not the moon, is not the sun, is way too big to be a star. And the closest analogy I can draw in terms of something people will be able to relate to visually is it's kind of like that scene in Star Wars where they're coming up on something that at first looks like a crescent moon, except this thing's not bright white. You see it very darkly, but you definitely see something akin to a crescent moon on the right-hand side of it. It is clearly a structured object. It has granularity. It's visible in certain frames and not in others, and what apparently is happening is that this object would normally not be visible to us on Earth at all because it's really in the fourth dimension. But I keep telling people the dimensional veil is thin and getting thinner all the time, and what this thing is doing, in essence, is it's kind of phasing in and out of our dimension. So on the videotape, you can see it. It's there in certain frames, and it's not in certain others. Just like some of the UFO researchers, when they've done careful analysis of footage of the UFOs, it's like it's there, and then it isn't. Then it reappears, except this is, you know, much more gradual, I guess I would say. But I've gone back and I've looked at it. I don't claim to be any video analysis expert, but I think that what we have here is the smoking gun that NASA can't explain away. It doesn't appear to be a lens flare. It's not a solar reflection. What comes up is visible at night. So far, it's not visible in daylight. But I've already got similar reports from California, and I fully expect more of things like this being seen elsewhere. My argument, and that of one of the ground contingents, is that this is, in fact, one of the new planetary stabilization ships that I wrote about a while back that people can look up on my site. So I think what we have here is what people frequently would call a game changer. It's just very difficult to explain away something of this magnitude. We're not talking about a glowy blob here. We're talking about something that quite clearly is not any kind of ordinary planetoid or whatever. It's nothing like that. It doesn't look like it. Whatever it is very complex on its surface. It's noticeably bumpy around its edges. And it doesn't look like any natural object I ever saw. So that, in turn, triggered, there's some thought it might be one of the biospheres, one of the super large liberation forces craft designed to evacuate large numbers, not necessarily even of people, but large numbers from any number of situations, and not just here. But the positioning suggested otherwise, intuitively, I felt that it was a planetary stabilization ship. Ground contingent came to that viewpoint, and check it out. Basically, I got on the horn, telepathically speaking, with one of the senior commanders, and it was confirmed that that's exactly what it was. It's a planetary stabilization ship. The question was, wait, well, do you want to hide it again? I said, no. People of Earth need to see this. It will, give them hope. It'll show them that they're not alone. And it'll be like the image I got was essentially of a boot right in NASA's face, kicking in NASA's teeth. NASA's been lying to us for decades about what's been seen and what hasn't been seen. It does it practically every time it says anything about what's going on in space and what's been discovered.
Mm-hmm.
So this is going to be a real headache for NASA, because it's out there, it's been seen so far by 102,546 people. Okay. As more and more people understand. Yes.
For the benefit of our listeners who are not familiar with what a planet stabilization ship, could you explain what that is?
Earth is becoming more and more unstable all the time. There have been multiple control means applied by, I'll call them the powers that were, and others, to keep certain things from happening, to basically prevent Earth from expressing normally. And so big quakes have been prevented, quakes have been moved to uninhabited parts of the world, fault systems have been locked up and whatnot, but it's kind of like holding the top down on a pressure cooker. You can do it for a while, but you're not going to be happy with the ultimate outcome.
Yeah.
So previously the Liberation Forces had ships that were in place that were doing things like sewing up faults to some degree with, we'll call it energy stitching for want of a better term, managing a lot of things. And what they found recently, and I wrote about this, the post-ETZD's report, Earth Changes Accelerating, on my site, is they realized that while that's great in theory, the problem is that when the correction is applied by Earth, what you wind up with is wholesale catastrophe. So now it's more of a triage situation, okay, that they're going to keep things from coming completely unstuck. And this also ties into the sinkhole problem and some other things that are happening. Earth is becoming less and less solid and substantial as the transition into fourth dimension occurs. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's why you get some of these openings up going on, and other activities are affecting it. But the planetary stabilization ships are keeping the planet from coming really unstuck, so basically mm-hmm. ripping apart.
But I have a question for you. As far as these planetary stabilization efforts and stuff like that, are things like HARP and interfering with these plans and these functions of stabilizing the planet as, like, say, our own government is, like, kind of, like, trying to toy with it and destroy the planet even more, per se?
HARP, as we know it, is but kind of the tip of an iceberg. My understanding is the real roots of HARP are way up, if you would, but up not necessarily being better, but in higher numbered dimensions. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So in a sense, it's like dealing with a hydra without a cauterizing tool. You can cut off a head, you can knock out a system or whatever, but without
mm-hmm.
dealing with the root cause, all it does is like a weed, it grows back.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of work being done on dealing with the root cause, and once that's dealt with, well, then the rest will kind of wither in time. But in the meantime, there are indications, and I haven't really gone into them in any detail. I've been head down on other things. But there are strong beliefs and certain well-informed quarters, like Not for Attribution Contacts, that HARP has figured in a number of major events lately.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a problem. It really is. But I think, like a lot of other things, it will ultimately be rendered moot by other developments. That would be the best characterization I could put on it right now, having not really studied it much lately.
Mm-hmm. And going off of your, you're talking about these liberation forces. Could you explain a little bit about these races, like where they come from or who they are?
I could, but that's highly sensitive information.
Mm-hmm.
And the best thing to do at this stage of the game is to say nothing. I will say that at least some of those involved would be what we would classify as humanoid.
Mm-hmm.
But I would also say that people listening to this need to reframe their definition of what's possible. In higher dimensions, things are markedly bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And people who followed some of the UFO research and some of the abduction accounts and whatnot, people talk about being on craft that are 5 miles long.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that sounds awfully impressive, and it is. But what if the being in the craft is, say, 100 feet tall?
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I talked to a ground contingent who describes being in terms of relative size, about the size of a gnat compared to some of these beings.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the conventional viewpoint on things is by no means necessarily valid. Things are different in the other dimensions. In fact, the laws of physics are different in other dimensions. And NASA has recently learned that if you go to a different galaxy, the laws of physics are different. They got images of certain nebulae, I believe it is, and they should be going apart according to the standard model at some rate X, and they're going at rate Z, which you simply can't explain using our physics. That's because the physics are different in another part of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
Fire, I'm told, does not express the same way in fourth dimension as it does here. Other things do not exist the way they exist here. Earth is very distinctive and in some ways unique within the universe. And it is a strategic focal point of a lot of activity by a lot of different groups. There's been a, you know, the dark forces, if you will, have had this planet under so many levels of control and thraldom, it isn't even funny, and now things are starting to happen. Things are starting to come unstuck for them. Opposition is being mounted to their schemes. But we're very late in the game, and people really need to start paying attention to what's going on and just being passive consumers of information. Does that answer your question?
Yes. I also have a follow-up question. It's about, you mentioned a little bit earlier about Earth is transitioning to the fourth dimension.
Yes.
Could you explain a little bit about that? And is everyone on this planet going to go there, or does everyone have to be like in a certain mindset in a sense, or does something have to change for those people to cross over to that fourth dimension?
I don't really know how it's exactly going to work. A lot of things, it's not intended as a cop-out, it's just the reality of the matter. There are many things in flux, there are things being negotiated, there are analyses being done, and we really, really don't know. We think we might know how it's going to go, but we don't know for sure. We do know other planets have gone through these transitions, and they can be simple and easy and peaceful, or they can be kind of so-so, or they can be nasty and ugly with a lot of casualties.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, as I understand it, only 40% of the apparent people on this planet are actually ensouled. You've got a lot of others that have incubi, one per person. The soul is taken out, stored somewhere. An incubus is imprinted with the hologram of the memory of the person. The incubus is very self-destructive. It's not very bright. And you can get it to do things. This happens to a bunch. And then you've got clones running around. And we're seeing some people that very well, you know, have long been suspected to be that way, and they seem to be falling apart before our eyes. It has been said that some of the clone regeneration facilities have been destroyed. And so when the clone starts to disintegrate, they have to get it out of the public eye in very short order. There are some who think this is what happened to Hugo Chavez in Venezuela. There are other people who seem to be falling apart at a very rapid rate. So that may be what we're seeing there. There's something I missed in there. So whatever the world's theoretical population is, for the sake of argument, let's say it's 10 billion. I know it isn't, but it's easier to work the numbers in my head. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Only 4 billion of the apparent population of the planet are actually humans in the normal sense of the word.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that makes the problem a lot more manageable, and then there are other things being worked on as to what to do. One part of a ground contingent that I talked to described going to a meeting with the Galactic Council or some such, and essentially looked like a chimney sweep. This person was just filthy. Well, it was filthy with all the darkness of Earth. Okay, it looked like pig pen and peanuts, essentially, only worse. So this is what we've been dealing with. People may think things are all rosy and fuzzy, but they're really not. They just have bought into the program because they've been trained to buy into the program. And they've been trained not to question authority and not to make waves and all this other stuff. But what's happening is that more and more people are going to see the disconnects between what they're being told and what's happening. And that's why I think this video from Neumeier Station 3 is so significant. Because people don't have to go, oh, well, you know, I think this UFO researcher is right or this UFO researcher is wrong. Go look at the video. Decide for yourself. Feel into it. What does it seem to be to you? And that's you in the larger sense of you, not just you individually.
Kind of going back a little bit to the fourth dimensional shift again. I've heard, I guess you can call them theories in a sense, that these lower dimensional beings, i.e. like these incubus and stuff like that, are kind of like trying to piggyback their ride onto the higher dimensions, like the fourth dimension and stuff like that. Do you know anything about this? Do you know if this would be any kind of accurate or anything?
To my knowledge, they're not going to be able to, but I really haven't looked into it in detail. It's not exactly like something there's a wiki for.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there are struggles and even, you know, an even greater struggle now because we had this business of an attack was mounted on Mars a while back.
Mm-hmm.
And it was beaten off, crushing victory over the dark forces, if you will, the psychopathic Earth leaders. And while there were some, I don't know, say 350 Earth humans who apparently were already on Mars involved, most of the forces, if you would, came from the Empire, as in the Star Wars Empire, you know, the Dark World. And since there were multiple groups within the powers that were, that weren't invited, they found out about it from, well, the Post and other things, and they were really bent out of shape about it. Now, so that's started all kinds of internal fighting, but they're probably grateful they weren't, given the outcome of the invasion effort.
Mm-hmm.
So these things are interrelated. You know, I know that over at the Pentagon, for example, they have some unflattering names for me. In essence, they think I'm nuts. At the same time, though, they're really concerned as to how I get what I get and what I make of it and all that other stuff. And they're really probably going to have a very bad time with the latest post. Because this isn't just, you know, John Kettler going on about something that can't possibly be verified, at least in their view. Go watch the videotape. You tell me if that's the moon or the sun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and especially if other people are seeing craft in parts of the sky where there is no moon, there is no planet, there is no comet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do you explain that away?
John, how would you account for the proliferation of all the triangle craft sightings, you know, over the last, say, 15 years? They seem to replace the disc as the vehicle of choice for the UFO beings. I've just been real curious about that.
So far as I know, the triangle craft are ours.
Mm.
How big a triangle are we talking here?
Well, they come in different sizes. Some big as just an ordinary airplane. Some, you know, might be a mile in width or something. You know,
my knowledge, we're not flying anything that size. We're flying stuff in the 30, 45, 60 feet on a side range, last I heard.
Yeah. And so you think most of the triangle sightings are ours then, really? Interesting.
Well, off the top of my head, I know from my own contacts, and there have been other reports, a guy named Edward Fouché, has his own network of highly cleared people from which he figured out what they call the TR-3B, and there may be a model or two beyond that.
Yeah.
They also call it Astra, which flies on not so much anti-gravity, but gravity reduction kind of technologies. Interestingly enough, using something very much like what the ancient Vedic texts refer to as the whirling vortex of Mercury, which is one way to generate gravity reduction and or anti-gravity. So mile on a side or whatever triangle, I'd say the safe bet is it's probably not from here. But where it's from, off the top of my head, I couldn't tell you.
Mm-hmm.
And while we're on such things, I'll bring something else up that you had asked me about.
Well, I'm going to ask you that question, the Vermana connection there, yeah.
Okay, well, let me get this thought out while I'm still thinking it. You had presented some information to me a while back. You were asking me about a second UFO war in the Pacific, and I will just say that I have pinged my sources repeatedly and gotten nowhere, so you probably have more information on what did or didn't happen there than I do. I've gotten no comment multiple times, and the last time I brought the issue up, I was told, in essence, gee, sorry, but there are some things that just have to stay classified, and I have no idea what that means or doesn't mean. So if you can find something on that particular subject, you're way ahead of me.
Oh, okay.
That's just how it goes. You know, unless you have infinite numbers of contacts, all with diverse sets of clearances and whatnot, you know, it all depends on who's got access to what information compartment or compartments. And
you know,
all the...
I'm sorry, I'm interrupting, you were talking about the triangles, and you said something here about their propulsion system. You made me think about the Vermanas. I know you wrote a book on that subject. You think they might have found one of these Vermanas and been able to back engineer it or something like that?
I don't know how they did it. I only know, in essence, that they've done it. You know, the Indians are essentially running what you might consider a highly unusual version of a Manhattan Project. They're not trying to build an atomic bomb. What they're doing is data mining the Bhagavad Gita and a bunch of other, the Ramayana, various other things for real-world usable technology. They're treating these things as non-mythic. My understanding is they've already, this was probably years ago, succeeded in extracting a recipe which made for very good radar absorbent material, a.k.a. stealth material. There's stuff on metallurgy. When I wrote this thing up, they had top people, well, they had Sanskrit scholars, because the texts are written in Sanskrit. They had Hindu religious experts. They had top-flight metallurgists. They had aeromedicine specialists. They had nutritionists. They had test pilots. They had combat pilots. They had structural engineers. If you name it, to build something, they had it. And what they're doing is they're meticulously combing through their ancient sacred texts in an effort to, if you would, recover their technological heritage. Now, subsequently, Sortofal, a.k.a. David Booth, broke a story, which sounded fantastical at first, but I checked with my contacts, and it was not so fantastical. In essence, a Vermana was discovered in a cave in Afghanistan. It was stuck in something like a time well, and efforts to release it got people killed. Some of the details are still being thrashed out. I may have to make some changes in what I wrote because there's some sort of disconnect. And as you know before, I've talked about changing timelines and things like that. And there are times when I don't trust my memory, but right now I'm in a situation where my memory is at odds with certain notes that certain parties made at the time. There's a disconnect there somewhere. So maybe we wound up on a different timeline, and maybe that explains it. I don't know, but I could have sworn the report went something like, yeah, they got it, and they got it out, and they put it on an airplane, and blah, 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 blah. That doesn't seem to be the case, so I'm kind of regrouping on that score. But the point is, they did encounter a real Vimana. It had armament on it that, in essence, made our hydrogen bomb seem like mouse toots by comparison. When you go back and you look at the ancient sacred text that talks about the duels in the sky and the attacks against armies which consumed, you know, whole formations and left elephants as dust and all this other stuff. Well, if you go dig at a place called Mohenjo-Daro, and I believe it's still in India, you can find shadows on the wall there, just like the ones in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, where the bomb went off, somebody was between the bomb and a wall or whatever, and because the light was super bright, it burned the negative image of the person. In essence, the shadow was left standing after all the brilliant light from the detonation. You can find the same things in India in ancient sites. There's a guy named David Hatcher Childress who wrote a book called Evidence of Ancient Atomic Warfare that people who are interested can look into there. There are great areas in the Middle East that are covered with what we would call trinitite, which is nuclear-fused sand, which becomes a variety of glass. There are great tracks that are covered in this stuff. And this is evidence of very powerful weapons having been used in the past. So the Indians are digging away at the technology. They have a place, a research facility, well, I would call it a facility, I'd call it a highly classified complex at a place called Pune in the foothills of the Himalayas, and it's their Area 51, if you would. That's where they do their black projects, and either they've got anti-gravity craft to some degree already, and this was as of several years ago, or they're being surveilled by one or more groups which have it. Us, Russia, China, something like that, or, and, they could be being surveilled by off-planet types as well. So, well, but this Vimana thing is really, really serious stuff. It is at the core of a number of propulsion concepts. And so you see, you know, what was old is new again kind of thing taking place.
Yeah.
But,
well, you wrote a book about Vimanas, and since we're on the subject of books you've written, why don't you give out information to our listeners how they could order your books?
You can get my books by going to my site, John Kettler, K-E-T-T-L-E-R, normal spelling of John, .com. And recently we changed the pricing structure after looking more closely at where things were in the ebook market and things like that. And we decided that, you know, better to be in a range where it wasn't even a second thought for people. You know, people routinely go in and spend far more money at Starbucks than I'm charging for the repriced ebooks. And that information you just won't find anywhere else. The kind of information that gives people with the Pentagon and various other agencies apoplexy and, well, we'll call them delicately gastrointestinal challenges. How's that? You know, so we got that. But while we're on books, I wanted to let your listeners know that the major thing I've been doing lately, I've gotten posts out from time to time, but for months, I have been very hard at work on a new book. This is called U.S. Spec Ops Revealed. And if you go to Google News, just type U.S. Spec Ops, S-P-E-C space O-P-S, and the pre-launch press release will be there along with a short video that was put together, and it will explain the whys and the wherefores. But this is going, there are lots of books on special operations out there now. We had Chris Tiles, American Sniper. We had Mark Bowen, Real Name Matt Bissonette's No Easy Day. There are lots of other ones. Last I heard, there were 10 new ones by SEALs, all of which went through security review. People who do these things are under non-disclosure agreements, they're under military security regs, and all this other stuff. I'm long out of the business, so I don't have to get my stuff approved. The book is going to talk about the special operators, the people who actually perform the operations on our nation's behalf, who go into places and do amazing, incredible things. Doing the impossible is kind of the normal thing for them. It talks about them. It talks about how they do what they do. It talks about some of the places where they do it. It talks about the special challenges facing the special operators, where the future of special operations is going, how that whole topic, people seem to think, oh, well, special warfare, you know, it's brand new, whole new way of doing things. It isn't. They're 300 years behind the power curve. Because the core of this nation's capability to do those things dates back to the Revolutionary War. And indeed, most of the Revolutionary War was fought using various kinds of special operators. From the Minutemen to David Bushnell's Turtle Submarine to Morgan's Rifles to Francis Marion, who was running guerrilla warfare operations against the British. These are all special operators. And people really don't understand the revolution, the American Revolution, unless they understand that. So I try to put these things into context. I tell stories you'll never hear on CNN, using information they probably couldn't even report. I talk about some of the weaponry that's used, from ordinary things used in remarkable ways to less ordinary things used in unusual ways to stuff that would give a science fiction writer a heart attack trying to come up with something far enough out to make the science fiction book interesting to readers. There are technologies currently fielded that, frankly, I wouldn't want to be a science fiction writer if I had to go up against it. I mean, to come up with something more exotic and advanced than that, it would make your head explode trying to keep up with it. So there are levels and layers and wheels within wheels. The point of the book is I wrote six different posts on my site on SEAL Team 6, things related to SEAL Team 6. And they say, write what you know, so that's what I did. I took that as a springboard and started trying to tell a larger story than just the Navy SEALs. So this time it's the Navy SEALs, it's the Army Delta Force, it's what I'll call, in the broader sense, Force Recon. They've got different names, but it's the Marine Special Operations Forces. And then it's Task Force 160 or Special Operations Aviation Regiment Airborne Night Stalkers out of Fort Campbell, Kentucky, who are the specialists in getting people in covertly and getting them out by any means necessary, from very quietly to guns blazing. And by guns, I'm talking about the same kind of guns on an Apache helicopter and Hellfire missiles and things of that nature. There are things going on day in and day out that dramatically affect what goes on this planet, and most of them you'll never hear about. You know, you'll hear about something if something goes wrong, or you'll hear about it if, for example, the vice president has a snootful and blurts out that, oh, yeah, the people that went after bin Laden, that was SEAL Team 6. You know, this is the kind of thing that gets people killed. I'm going to tell some stuff that will probably cause all kinds of problems in a number of alphabet soup agencies. But what you will not read in what I wrote, and you will not hear from me in any talk ever, is really the kind of detail that breaches what they call OPSEC, or operational security. Nor, unless somebody else has released the information, will you ever hear a name from them or read one. Same reasoning. And there are things, you know, you've heard of getting stuff on background, which kind of clues you in as to what's going on, but you can't talk about it. Well, I got stuff like that, too. That are used to shape what I can say and how I say it. And this is what I call dancing down the razor's edge. Because if I say too much...
Yeah. You're speaking,
you started to say something.
I was going to ask you one thing. You thought about some exotic weaponry. Have you heard about something they call a sound gun? Lynn Powell had something on her Earth Files website about this technology was used. You ever heard of that? A sound gun?
Well, the first one I know of, well, of course, if you really want to get cute, you can go back to the story of the fall of the walls of Jericho, the coordinated blowing of the shofar. But more recently, the Germans were basically working on an acoustic cannon. I'm not quite sure how it worked, but the evidence that they had such a thing, and at least in prototype testing to see, you know, how it all worked, is clearly there. There are directional beam acoustic devices which can single out a person in a crowd and, you know, hit the person with disabling levels of sound. There are merchant ships right now, for example, off the coast of Africa that have these things to keep pirates away. You could just, you know, first you can warn them. You can use it as a very sophisticated loud hailer, if you would. But if that doesn't get the desired result, you can crank up the power to the point where people have urgent business somewhere else.
Yeah, right.
So it's a non-lethal weapon, but you might not think so if you were on the receiving end.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, there are things you can do if you've got the right gear. There are certain resonant frequencies in the human body, and you can trigger all sorts of things. One of which will give people immediate pause is nausea. If you get a low enough frequency, what it does is it couples into your belly and bad things start to happen. I know because many years ago I went to a dinner for people competing for a scholarship, and there was a guy, a physicist, who brought a bunch of carpet tubes, if you would, of various dimensions. And he had a Bunsen burner. What he would do is heat up a column of air in the thing using a Bunsen put on its side, and then he would stand it back up to vertical, and it would emit a note, because it is much like the same principle as a pipe organ. Okay. So depending upon the dimensions of the tube, you got a higher or a lower note. Well, he let one go as we were finishing up dinner, and people looked a little green around the gills. He said, I got one for sure that will, you know, do a lot worse than that. I was like, okay, I'm convinced. You know, you get a low enough frequency, it just it couples right into your stomach, and you've seen like that famous footage of the bridge where it starts swaying back and forth and tears itself apart. Well, your guts won't tear themselves apart, but you know, you won't tear. It'll really disrupt your midsection. So that's one simple example of a sound. But I don't know specifically what's being referred to here.
If I may, I might comment a little bit on that. Like, there is some things like called LRADs and stuff like that that do emit like frequencies and vibration as far as sound and stuff like that. And I've even heard theories about how that's one way that HARP also affects us, because they also do frequency and vibration, and they transmit it over long distances and affect us mentally and emotionally and spiritually in different aspects. Also, because I do energy healings as well as hypnotherapy and stuff like that. Our body is very susceptible to these frequency and vibrational matters because we are energy beings. And say if you launch a low vibration at your stomach, stuff like that, you can rupture, like you were saying, your stomach. It can cause intestinal problems because what you're doing, you're knocking the natural frequency of your organs out of tune, causing disease, and you can even cause ailments. In fact, you can actually send energy to a heart to stop it from beating. Energy can start a heart and stop a heart. So
that's
true. Be careful with what you're doing.
Yeah, well, in circa 1962, Russian psychic Nina Kulagina demonstrated that level of control over a frog's heart using her psychic powers, if you would, or telekinetic powers. Yes, and like I say, things have resonant frequency. You've probably been in situations where you encountered a note that it, you know, as people would say, it rattled your fillings, kind of like that. But this particular thing, the note that particular carpet roller put out was enough that people were visibly green, and if he dropped it a little more in terms of frequency, if it had been more bass than it was already, it wouldn't have been pretty at the dinner. That's an example of what can be done. There are other ways of doing these things, too. You can use microwaves to tickle something called mast cells in the brain, and you get the same result. And believe it or not, that one was written up in Playboy magazine about 1990.
Wow.
Now, as a general rule, anything we're just now finding out about, if it was perceived as having real value, they are as much as 50 years ahead of the perceived level of technology.
Uh-huh.
Now, let me give you a frame of reference for that. In black program realm, at the same time, the Wright brothers are flying their first plane at Kitty Hawk and making history. They're already flying F-86 jets, and that's from 1953, okay? Korean War. That gives you some idea of how far advanced the technology is in reality over what we think it is. And if you've got that kind of technological horsepower, you can structure the very notion of what is and isn't real, especially if you've got to control the media on top of it.
Definitely. Definitely. I was actually watching a documentary the other day that kind of covers that by Dr. Stephen Greer, the Serious Disclosure Project. And that was,
I know a little bit about it, but I haven't seen the film.
It's a really good film. I encourage anyone who's interested in the field of ufology and ETs and stuff like that and advanced technologies to check it out. It's pretty good. He talks a lot about suppressed technologies and stuff like that, down to the man who created the engine that ran off of water, down to these black op projects you're talking about, the fundings of trillions of dollars that go to these black op projects that no one ever knows what these monies go to. No one even hears about them. And he goes on a little bit more There was actually a MUFON director who is from, I think it was Southern California, I'm not really certain where, just California, and he was saying a little bit about how he was at a presentation of someone, I can't remember that individual's name, and he was saying how we have, as you were saying, interstellar capabilities now. talking about us having like UFOs.
Well, my understanding is we don't, but compared to where the public thinks our space technology is, we're way past chemical rockets.
Mm-hmm.
At least not in the sense of, say, a Saturn V or something like that. We're ridiculously beyond that.
But my knowledge,
we do not have interstellar capability. If you're talking about superluminal, I do not believe we're there. If you're talking about getting somewhere by Stargate-type things, then
yes,
that may very well be true. There are certainly indications that that's the case, and back when I was doing all this stuff on the Reptoids, their ships are not superluminal. They move from place to place via jump gates, which is why controlling jump gates or stargates becomes so important. And if you believe some of the reports, there have been wars fought on this planet for control of stargates. Iraq is one such. There are others. Just like you have the fascinating fact that quite a number of military bases have energy vortexes on their premises. Again, it's all about controlling things. Similarly, if you look at the Lee lines, or ley lines, I'm not quite sure how to pronounce them.
Yeah.
But what was done on them back when? Well, they were sites of pagan temples and whatnot. You know, the
powerful energy source.
Naturally based, animistic kind of things, and then what happens when Christianity comes along? It destroys the facilities and builds on the site, thus, in essence, capturing it. This has happened over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm. And I agree. We are actually approaching the top of the hour. We're going to take a quick 3-minute commercial break, and we'll be back. So hold on to your thoughts, folks.
Stay with us, Trevor.
Oh, I'll stay with you.
Hello. This is Ari Pierce of the RBR Network. I would like to take a moment of your time to tell you about our other fine shows in RBR. Starting every Monday, we have Cosmic Contacts with Pam Drennan at 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. Central Standard Time. Join Pam with her wide variety of guests, from astrologers, psychics, mediums, to different types of healing modalities. Next is a Searcher's Roadmap with Keith Blanchard at 8 to 9 p.m. Central Standard Time. Keith focuses on the spiritual, ascension, UFOs, metaphysics, and so much more. Join him for a spiritual journey. On Tuesday, we have the I Am Well Show with Anamika at 7 to 8 p.m. Central Standard Time, live from the Netherlands. Join her as she speaks with alternative medicine practitioners and healers all over the world. You are going to be surprised when you hear modalities that you've never heard before, from Europe to Asia to the Native American nations in the United States. A show you don't want to miss. On Wednesday, it's the No Show with Reverend Robert McMillan at 7 to 8 p.m. Central Standard Time. Enjoy the different perspectives from religion to spiritualism with a twist of psychology. This is a very interesting show that we are sure you will enjoy. After the No Show, tune in for the Laws of Material Wealth Personal Development Program with James Renford Powell at 8:30 to 9:30 p.m. Central Standard Time. Join James on this 54-week personal development program. It connects the 13 universal principles with a business perspective. This is an amazing show that can and will change your life. Thursday, join Daryl Clark on the Progressive News Weekly at 5:30 to 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. Hear the news that the media is not telling you. It's a great show with a lot of interesting guests. Friday nights, join Jeff Pierce and myself for the Spirit Walker Show at 6 to 8 p.m. Central Standard Time. This show covers anything and everything under the sun: spiritualism, paranormal, the unexplained, conspiracy theories, UFOs, and much, much more. Saturday nights, tune in for Night Search with Eddie Middleton and Justin Abner at 6 to 8 p.m. Central Standard Time. Night Search focuses on UFOs, alien abductees, and the unexplained. Tune in for a wild 2 hours. Thank you for listening and enjoy your show.
Hey. So we're back here with John Kettler, and he is a man that has unbelievable sources of what we call inside information and methods of accessing information that by non-conventional means, using telepathy and astral travel, and that he comes up with the kind of information that is food for some serious thought, and whether you can verified or not, you're going to do some serious thinking and churning your mind over hearing him interviewed on our show. Like I always say at the end, it's outrageous information, but it may all be true, folks. John, thanks for being on here again with Night Search. And
You're quite welcome to be here.
What now?
I said you're quite welcome. I'm happy to be here.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. I'm going to put out our call-in number in case we have some people might want to call in here. We do have live call-ins. If they want to call in with a question or comment, they can call us here at 347-838-9142. That's 347-838-9142. They can also come to our chat room, and Justin is monitoring that also if we have any call-ins. So just to get back, I have a lot of things I want to just toss out for you to respond to. Things, of course, I've been very curious about for years, and I know you have some slants on things that I never encountered from any other guest before. That I certainly relish to hear what you have to say in response to some of these things. Like, I'd like you to address one thing: is time travel. And I've been hearing a lot about this Andrew Bishago and traveling to Mars and all. And could you comment on maybe him, if you would, or and time travel in general? And is that technology something our government actually does possess at this time?
Okay, well, things are interrelated in some strange ways. Many years ago, there was a ex-Bulgarian Academy of Sciences researcher named Vladimir Trzeski, and he hooked me up with a copy of a thing called My Paperclip Father by Helga Morrow, or what are they called? Morrow Tapes, M-O-R-R-O-W. Her father was a paperclip scientist.
John, let me just interrupt you. I've interviewed her before. Her father was a German scientist that went to another dimension.
Yeah, Friedrich Augustus, whatever the heck it is, I can't remember. It's been a long time. But the point is this. He described being inside Mars. Now, obviously, we had no spaceship then, at least anything that anyone would think of. But what it screams to me of is a jump gate, a okay? And then later on, in, under Project Montauk, or Project Phoenix, let's call it the Montauk, Project Montauk. I may not have the term right, but it doesn't really matter. Here's the important part. The technology of the Montauk experiment relied on a psychic sitting in a special chair, which consisted of a blend of Sirian, as in Sirius, S-I-R-U-S, and our own technology. This technology acted to focus the psychic energies of the psychic in the chair. The psychic would then create an artificial wormhole, rather reminiscent of that old television series, Time Tunnel.
Yeah.
My understanding is you could get something in there roughly the size of a military 2.5-ton truck, maybe a bit bigger than that. Okay, so this is a way you can go from one place to another place. If you look at what Preston Nichols said, he talked about how they sent a lot of children and I guess others, street people and whatnot, they were trying to get to some certain place and they lost an awful lot of them in the process. But what happened to Helga Morrow's father? I mean, he got there, he did whatever he was supposed to do, he came back. Circa 1950, she describes him as having, he had an underground office in, I want to say Denver, he worked for Martin, which later became Lockheed Martin. But she describes seeing essentially space shuttle diagrams and whatnot in his underground office. This is 1950. If you read the standard accounts, the space shuttle design didn't even begin until the mid-60s. So this is just a tiny glimpse at the disconnect between scientific and technology as we, scientific and military technology as we understand it and what's really out there. So it has been confirmed to me by my own contact that this looking glass business that's talked about over on the Project Camelot site is in fact real, that you can look down various timelines and see what's coming. Of course, it's kind of like a psychic's prediction in that you can look down the timeline, but the one where things are clearest is the one where the highest probability of that occurring happens. But what's been happening is there have been, as I understand it, essentially timeline wars in which one side tries to put society, civilization, what have you, on a particular course, maybe toward destruction, and somebody else intervenes and goes back and does something else, and you start to get into time paradoxes and all kinds of problems. But
yeah,
as I understand it, hyperdimensional travel is by definition time travel. And so you've got all these things that have to be watched for, and you know, let's say there's a disaster. Well, maybe you can head off the disaster by jumping back in time and putting things on a different branch of the probability tree and changing the outcome. You know, on one path, let's say Los Angeles is destroyed by an enormous quake. Well, you know, the other side may not be too keen on that, so you know, they put things on a different timeline and Los Angeles is not destroyed. You get into things like that. So there should have been, long since, a lot more seismic activity in Los Angeles, but if you look at the plot, it goes up to L.A. on one side and stops, and it goes to L.A. on the other side and pretty much stops. There, you know, there have been some small quakes in Marina del Rey and places like that, but by and large, for a very long time, that part of the fault has been locked. That's not natural. That is induced. So you're dealing with really, really powerful technologies and things that most people wouldn't even, you know, I mean, they could relate to it as science fiction, but that's about it. So what the real capabilities are, I don't know. There's what we can do in Earth technology, and then there's what's really out there. And I think it far eclipses what we can do.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just so mind-boggling, I can't even begin to wrap my mind around all that. I'm sure something's going on with the time travel and different timelines. I've heard a number of interviews on the Project Camelot that
utterly mind-boggling stuff, if it's real, you know, apparently it is. Okay.
But look on the bright side, Eddie. At least you don't have to figure out how to explain it to other people.
Yeah.
You don't have to write this stuff up.
Yeah. Oh, Lord. Let's address another thing. I heard a talk that Butch Witkowski gave to a MUFON meeting last year or so. He's a researcher up in Pennsylvania that started his own UFO research group. He's a former investigative police officer. He has been looking into the UFO human mutilation connection. Could you comment on that?
Definitely going on. I don't know to what extent anymore, but it's well documented going back to certainly a case circa 1956, I want to say, somewhere around there. A Sergeant Louette was out on White Sands Missile Range looking for the wreck of a missile that had gone down, and as I understand it from the witness reports, a craft came overhead, something like a metal tentacle came snaking out, and the sergeant was snatched up, and they subsequently found him somewhere else, and he'd been cored out, his eyes were gone, they'd gone into his internals. It was really, really nasty business. And there have been other things since. There are numerous reports from South America of craft terrorizing villages and snatching people and killing them. There's a lot of other stuff, too, some of which I will probably be writing about in posts, if events permit. Things are happening the public doesn't have a clue about. It's being suppressed to protect various interests, and these things have gone on. They most definitely have gone on, just like there's been all kinds of illicit human experimentation, too.
Yeah.
Years ago, in a MUFON journal I borrowed, a UFO research group called CAPS, AITRAD, had a source that referred to as three-star. It was a retired three-star general, at least supposedly. And in essence, the general said something to the effect of, you know, whatever the number is. Let's say it's 50,000 kids go missing every year, just for the sake of argument. He said that only 10% of this was attributable to action by ETs. The rest of it was attributable to our own dark projects, our genetic research, our biowarfare experimentation, all this other stuff. And I already told you where a whole bunch of people wound up. They wound up at failed attempts to get to Mars through this jump gate, if you would.
Yeah.
You know, and this is a government that thought it was a good idea to put radioactive material up the noses of kids, that thought it was a good idea to release radiation into the environment to see where it went, to deliberately test dirty nuclear devices to simulate a crash. But, you know, the list just goes on and on and on. And, you know, pick an area that's horrible and has been done to us.
Hmm.
In many cases, not once, but repeatedly. I mean, I know people who are survivors of being downwind, they call them downwinders, of the open-air atomic testing in Nevada, and not only does the person have multiple problems, but the mother is dying, various relatives are also dying, multiple forms of cancer and all this stuff. This stuff is not happenstance. It's not random. Just like many years ago, John Wayne, who ultimately died of cancer, and people were, well, you know, it's because he smoked. Well, maybe not. Because he did this awful film called Genghis Khan, the Mongol, or something like that. Come to find out, this film was shot on a location that was downwind of the Nevada test site where they were doing all this atomic testing. The area was radioactively hot, and a whole bunch of people developed cancer and died who were involved in that film.
I haven't heard of that. That's interesting.
Yeah. And there's a statement, if you look for it, where people at the Pentagon, when confronted with, you know, people objecting to these things and whatnot, basically said it's their patriotic duty to suck it up and, if necessary, die for the good of the nation. Now, never mind that we don't check with them. I mean, it doesn't say that. This is my editorializing. Never mind that they're not fully informed. Never mind that consent was not obtained. Never mind, never mind, never mind. But this is the attitude of people in the Pentagon, some of the senior people. So that we should just endure whatever hardships their crazy nuclear testing causes. Now, you have to understand, while we're on nuclear weapons, that there were concerns before the first atomic bomb was detonated that it might incinerate the atmosphere.
Yeah,
then when they went to the boosted fission stuff, they were a lot more concerned. And then when they were getting ready to test the first hydrogen, and I won't say bomb, people say bomb, but I've learned that that is the incorrect term. It is device, because to my knowledge, what I've been told is there never was a hydrogen bomb. They had, it was just way too big to weaponize. But at any rate, they had... some of the scientists had grave concerns it was going to ignite the atmosphere, and they still said it. So this shows you the mindset of science with no restraints on it, essentially.
Yeah.
Get the project built, it doesn't matter what happens, kind of thing.
Yeah, there was some concern they might set off a chain reaction that would destroy the whole world.
Yeah, and there are weapons around called scalar weapons, which, if used in enough quantity, can cause the sun to go nova, which ought to give people a thing or two to think about. They go to, look up a guy named Tom Bearden and go to his site, www.chenieire, it's a lake in Louisiana.org. And they can go to the table of contents and look for the weapon slides. And it explains scalar weapons, which are weapons based on the technology the great Nikola Tesla devised. And when he was talking, and people thought he was nuts about a depth beam, this is what he was talking about. And these are hyperdimensional weapons, which is to say they operate in both the normal sense of an energy beam, but it's got another component to it that actually transcends this dimension. And then the energy comes out on the other side at the target or whatever. This is the kind of thing that's science fiction. But here's the reality. Back during the Soviet-Afghan war, there were people in the foothills of the Himalayas, what they call the Hindu Kush, who could look into the Soviet Union, and over a ABM research and test facility called Pulsari Shagan, they could see glowing domes in the sky over this complex. Airline pilots saw and reported the same thing. These are force fields. Sometimes the nesting of force fields. This is the stuff of science fiction. They were doing that circa 1980, maybe even earlier, but that's when for sure we saw it. Somewhere around the late 80s, after I became aware of some of this stuff, I went to our, I used to work for Hughes Aircraft Missile Systems Company, or Missile Systems Group, on tactical missiles, and then later on I worked for North American Aerospace Operations at Rockwell, which has been bought up by, I believe, Boeing. And it gets very complicated keeping track of all these mergers and buyouts. And there I was involved more with strategic type systems, and I went to our representative from the very interestingly named Foreign Technologies Division of the Air Force. And I said, hey, I think we got a serious problem here. What can you find out? And he went, looked, and he said he couldn't find out anything. Well, I subsequently learned that either they kept him out of the loop altogether, or he lied to me, and he had the clearance. I don't know for sure, but it was very, very highly classified. And the U.S. was way behind the eight ball for a long time on this technology. And reading between the lines, it looks like Israel was who kept us in the game long enough to catch up ourselves. I'm not quite sure that's necessarily right, but I believe that to be the case. So here again, we talk about HARP doing all these things, and oh, by the way, the information I have is HARP cannot in and of itself trigger quakes. It can maybe help something that's a warning, if you would, but so far as I can tell from my contacts, it doesn't directly have the ability to trigger quakes. This other technology does. This Tesla technology can put enough energy in a vault to break it wide open. You can instantly freeze things. You can instantly cook things. You can completely disrupt electronics. You can cause high explosives to detonate. You can fricassee a body in such a way there's not a mark on it, but it will not decompose because it kills all the bacteria and everything else in the body that would normally allow it to decompose. Nor will, say, vultures or carrion feeding animals or anything like that, they won't even come near it. They want absolutely nothing to do with it. And that technology has been around for quite some time. I'm talking decades. Just to give you some idea of what's out there. You know, and Dr. Judy Wood, on her site, has presented evidence that things very much along those lines were used on 9/11. She's got some truly fascinating overheads where it looks like somebody took an apple core to a skyscraper. Space-based beam weapon. No, oh, nothing ever came to Star Wars. Wrong. So, before I get too far into this, I think it'd probably be good if you ask me a question, because once I get rolling, I
yeah, right.
Stop a while.
I have so many things I want to just touch on, you know. Could you comment on the chemtrail? Yeah, the chemtrail phenomenon. What's going on with that?
Well, I don't know the latest, but it's a number of things. Dr. Edward Teller, the father of the so-called hydrogen bomb, argued the need for an artificial ionosphere to replace the damaged one, which, interestingly enough, probably was damaged by secret nuclear strikes against the Nazi base that didn't exist in Antarctica. That didn't exist, I'm being facetious, because it did. And not only do we have the information from people who were down there and the smashing military defeat Admiral Byrd underwent, that there are accounts of British special operations down there against the facility, too. So nuclear strikes on the Antarctic base may very well have caused the hole in the ozone layer, not the chlorofluorocarbons they've been trying to tell us were the root cause. So, let's see. So chemtrails, one of the things they seem to be is that, but I think that's probably more of a cover story. Another thing for sure they are is they make the ionosphere electrically conductive in a way to a much greater degree than it ever was. Now, long-distance radio communications, one of the ways that, you know, like radio is much better at night. The reason radio propagates better at night is the sun is not stirring up the ionosphere, which disrupts the propagation of the signal. So consequently, at night, you can hear stations from several states away that normally can only be heard within the state. That kind of thing. Okay, so what you can do is basically turn the ionosphere into a mirror. You salt the atmosphere with barium compounds, which, oh, by the way, children, is very toxic, and they've discovered that the contents of the chemtrails are well over 10 times the EPA limit for barium. I mean, we're talking airborne Superfund site here. There are various other things, and then you've got another whole level of chemtrails. Okay, so part of that has to do with not just making the atmosphere a certain way. It has to do with changing the reflective properties of the planet. They're claiming, oh, you know, the Earth is warming up and whatnot. Well, yes, but not for the reason they tell you. The Earth is warming up because the Earth is getting hotter, therefore expanding, and it's not the top of the ice crust that's melting, it's the bottom. But they don't tell you that. So another part of the chemtrail stuff is that it's apparently a form of biowarfare. There are numerous cases on a report where the chemtrail, next thing you know, the emergency rooms are full of children and seniors in respiratory distress. People who encountered something that looked like spider silk and touched it wound up horribly ill, and I think some died. They later analyzed some of this material, and they found it had human blood sera in it.
Yeah.
And I forget how many known pathogens. Basically, the blood acts as a culture that protects and nourishes all these horrible diseases, if you would. So people touch it, and they get a whopping dose of multiple diseases, and it just overwhelms their immune system. So you've got, it's almost like, well, what effect do you want today, and we'll load that on the airplane. I've heard of cases where somebody was in the wrong place at the right time and got the outfall from one of the tanks and became deathly ill almost immediately. So it's not any one thing, it's a number of things. And then you have some other interesting interactions where something will be seeded, a chemtrail will be seeded, and then a craft will come along and it will, kind of like Pac-Man, eat it as it's dispensed. Then you also have things that look like aircraft, but, well, really aren't. Something going on, and they're emitting something into this dimension, but the craft themselves are, well, holograms, for want of a better characterization. They are a projection into 3D of something which is 4D, fourth dimensional. So it is by no means a cut and dried thing. There are there's chemtrails.org, there's, what is it, Blue Skies, there's a number of things. And I've got some stuff over on my site in the FAQs. You can look up something called GeoSag, G-E-O, like geography, caps S-A-G.
One thing that amazes me about the chemtrail phenomenon is how the mass, population seems oblivious to it. It's not something that should be alarming to people. They just don't pay attention to it, or seemingly just unaware of it.
Well, they're aware of what they're told to be aware of, as a general rule. They've been trying to sell us on the notion that there's just a lot of haze. Now, that's not true. What they're doing is they're blocking the sun. And by blocking the sun, they are blocking, if you would, evolution from occurring. They are dumbing down the populace. I've heard some things to the effect that there are nano things in some of this stuff, too. And my understanding is that they get into your body, and the next thing you know, what do they call this thing? Morgellons disease, I believe is what it's called. People go through terrible pain because these metal splinters start pushing up through their skin. Well, my understanding from my contacts is that what is happening there is this artificial robotic kind of life thing is putting up an antenna saying, I'm here, is there anybody else here? And if it doesn't get some answers, its buddies start swarming in. Okay, now that doesn't give you something to think about for a week or two. You have no pulse, in my view. That apparently is something else that's being seeded in the chemtrails. I'm not up to speed on nanotech or anything else, but I can tell you they've built motors using individual atoms. They are, they've made lettering doing the same thing. There's all kinds of amazing technology out there. So chemtrails are very complex. They have different purposes. The people seeding them may or may not know what that specific batch is designed to do. They're just told to go out and do X, and you do it here, and you do it for this long at that altitude, and so forth. Now, there are others who are winning. They know what they're doing, and they do it anyway. And my understanding from a lot of other researchers is that this chemtrail business tracks squarely to that wonderful outfit that we all know and revile called Monsanto, which in more innocent times I knew for polyester fiber was that they had stuck to that instead of trying to suppress all these self-replicating grains and vegetables and, for that matter, fruit, and force us to use their, you buy it once, use it, and then go buy another set from them, and patenting the genes of the food crops and all this other stuff. There's Monsanto for you.
Justin, do you have a question or comment there? Is that you?
No, I didn't say anything. I was just listening.
Someone was chimed in there for a second. It wasn't you. I don't know who it was.
Yeah, I heard a whistle a little bit earlier. I didn't know what that was.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys heard that or not.
I'm going to give out our calling number one more time here since we've got about 20 minutes left. If you want to call in, it's 347-838-9142. That's 347-838-9142. Give us a call. Join us in the chat room there. Let's move on to another topic, the crop circles. What's going on with that? What's the agenda behind that? Who's doing it and why,
I'll be the first to admit that right now I don't have a handle on it. I haven't been studying it. I've seen some of the pictures from relatively recent circles. They're certainly fascinating, but one of the things I can tell you with absolute confidence is two British guys working on weekends did not create the bulk of the crop circles. Okay? So trampling down a crop such that it doesn't grow back is not the same thing as artificially softening the joints on a stalk, having it fold over, and then have it re-solidify and continue to grow parallel to the ground instead of vertically. And this is readily verifiable if you take one that's, I can't remember the guy's names, but I think one of them was named Ed, but I'm not positive.
Oh, David.
If you look,
somebody, yeah.
Right. Well, whatever the names are don't really matter. But if you look at those stalks under a microscope or even under gross external examination, it's immediately apparent that one's a broken stalk, and the other is something that would drive a botanist insane. And they're finding all kinds of mathematical relationships and whatnot. Can some of the researchers be faked out of their socks? Oh, yeah, it's quite possible. And there have been attempts to duplicate some of the effects with various things. Looks like microwaves may figure in. I remember a long time ago, maybe decades, Linda Moulton Howe got photographs of mysterious orbs over the ground, and next thing you know, there's a crop circle. Maybe it was even video. I honestly don't remember. It's been a long time, and you can't stay on top of everything. And as you guys know, I have a lot of projects of my own. If I'm doing them, I can't be watching what other people are doing.
Yeah. if I may, what I've heard about crop circles, they were kind of like maps for bodies kind of entering into this, I guess, system, little roadways, which ways they can take to go in between dimensions or whatever. Is one thing that I've heard about them.
I'm not going to try to convince you. I know things I don't know.
Exactly.
There are lots and lots of things I don't know. And to the best extent possible, if I don't know, I will tell you.
Well, let's talk about the big picture again here. Is there an actual, I guess, war between the forces of dark and the forces of good for the planet? Or could you comment on the big picture some more? I know that's what you focus on a lot.
Well, in the larger picture, there have been multiple wars fought. And there may very well be others. Well, I've talked before about war against the reptoids. I've talked about war against the blob. We had that whole thing waged in the Pacific and also the Antarctic oceans, where we had stuff running around that was like something out of an H.P. Lovecraft Cthulhu story.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You
know, things with hundreds of tentacles and that could appear, you know, essentially gobble up and dissolve, say, the officer of the deck on a Navy ship, leaving nothing but a telescope, which was a sign of office. You know, they're invisible in the visible band, but detectable on the near-infrared, which video cameras have, that kind of thing.
Like
happily, that one has been resolved, but it shows what can happen. And here's fair warning to your listeners. As the transition into fourth dimension continues to progress, more and more strange and maybe even scary or worse things are going to be seen. Because these are denizens of the fourth dimension. That's where they live. And guess what? We're showing up on their turf, essentially. The veil is getting very thin. It's just like I talked about that huge object that was filmed from, or videoed from Neumeier Station 3 in Antarctica, where this thing is in and out of our dimension. Same thing. I know of cases where back when we were dealing with the reptoid stuff, one lady who could see into the fourth was driving down Santa Monica Boulevard, and what comes bounding across the road right in front of her? A reptoid carrying some sort of machine gun weapon. It came bounding across the road and kept going. So people need to kind of steel themselves to understand that they're kind of sliding into the twilight zone and the territory of outer limits and things like that. Their tiny little world is undergoing some very dramatic changes, and they're only going to get more rapid and more severe.
Yeah.
You know? And there are some people out there who think, well, you know, when we get into the fourth dimension, everything will be sweetness and light, you know, and they think they're going to heaven in the Judeo-Christian sense of the term, and they're going to be floating on clouds and playing lyres or harps or what have you. They're in for a very rude awakening based on the sum total of everything I've seen, everything I've experienced, and everything I've been told in terms of my dealings with ground contingents and ETVDs and my own explorations. The people who think they're going to be in what one of the people who used to work with me called, you know, pink ponies and fluffy kittens, are really, really going to be in for a terrible surprise.
Yeah,
because it's not going to be like that at all, at least not based on what I see.
Yeah.
You know, they say your mileage may be free.
Yeah, I shared some of your information with a
English professor I know that he has a fairly open mind to check out some of these things that I share with him. And his comment after, you know, reading some of the material about the blobs, you know, the story, he said, bizarrely fascinating.
Well, that's pretty open-minded. I certainly didn't expect you to tell me that.
I'm bizarrely fascinating. Yeah. Well, what about the Grays agenda with the abductions? Are they, what are they trying to do? Like David Jacobs thinks they're creating a hybrid race of, you know, cross between aliens and humans, and that they're starting to populate the planet with these hybrids. Could you comment on that?
Well, I've seen some things that indicate that's what's going on. There are cases where women are taken and are given some sickly-looking infant that's sort of human and sort of alien, and they're supposed to nurture it. Because I guess they're dying in the hands of those that brought them forth through some sort of lab culturing or whatever. There are numerous accounts like that. I would claim I'm up to speed on that area. I have been given to understand that some of these species thought that emotion was a useless trait and bred it out, and, well, now they found themselves, they screwed themselves on what should have been their evolutionary progression. They've dead-ended themselves. So then you get things where they're traveling back in time to get on a better branch and fix the problem, or head it off at the pass, if you would. So there are brute force techniques, and there are more subtle techniques, and there are really subtle techniques, and everything in between. But do I have a direct handle on the Grays agenda? No, I don't. I'm not sure anybody does, quite frankly.
Yeah.
Especially since it's my understanding you got a whole bunch of different varieties of gray running around.
Yeah, well, yeah. I've heard
challenging
that.
Yeah. Enough.
Yeah. What about, could you comment on the recent citizen sharing on UFO disclosure of the Washington the National Press Club that Stephen Bassett put together? What's your reaction to that? Any comment on that?
I have none because I don't know anything about it.
Yeah, it happened here.
I have no idea what was said. The last National Press Club thing I'm aware of involving UFOs was Dr. Stephen Greer's thing that was jammed.
Yeah.
Well, his disclosure project thing, which I watched some pieces of. That's the last one I knew of. And most recently, National Press Club thing that I know of was last week, I believe, when they had the three of the families of members of SEAL Team 6 who were shot down and or deliberately murdered in Afghanistan when that Chinook had, I think, about 20 of them on there, and three combat controllers and several air crew. I forget the exact number, but it's of that order. But I don't know anything about a Stephen Bassett and a National Press Club presentation.
Yeah.
I just don't. When did it occur?
Oh, it was April the 27th through May the 3rd. I think it was 3 days of testimony, and they had all kind of, you know, top former, you know, military officials and pilots and police officers and UFO researchers, and they had former congressmen there to interrogate them and judge, you know, the veracity of the whole thing. And I think it came off really well, but it just hardly got the attention of the media, though. That's what Bassett was hoping, he'd get major media attention, but very little, actually. So,
well, I'm sure there are some people interested, and there have been signs that control over the media is starting to deteriorate. One of the more interesting ones to me is that, I don't know, maybe it was a couple of months ago, and I forget the specific subject, but in essence, The Pentagon didn't want something covered, and the most unlikely network of all covered it and wound up being banned from Pentagon briefings for a while. It's that home of the ultra-right Fox. I never thought there would be a day when Fox would get itself in trouble with the Pentagon. Yet that's exactly what happened. ABC, CBS, NBC, not one of them got in trouble, or CNN for that matter. Fox did. Now, if that's not an indicator of something starting to happen, I have no idea what qualifies.
So the media is starting to pay more attention to the phenomenon and not treat it as a joke like they used to.
Well, sure. And look at what's happened in the aftermath of the Boston attacks. The dust wasn't even settled before the unraveling of the official story began. No, we have the oh-so-convenient Croatians, or whatever they were, Chechens, rather, my apologies, Chechen brothers who were building bombs and all this other stuff. And the person supposedly involved mysteriously gets shipped out of the country, and that's just like the business with the Oklahoma City bombing, where a key person named Andreas something or other got shipped out of the country so no one could interview him and put him under oath and all this other stuff. So we're supposed to believe that these Chechens did it and whatnot, but that's not what the evidence supports. What the evidence supports is covert operatives, most likely based on what I understand has been reported in the media to be whatever the successor to Blackwater is. People were seen coming in with backpacks and leaving without them. Gee, I wonder what would fit in a backpack. So this is a destabilization operation. It's intended to scare the public so badly the public will do things that those who want to stay in control want to happen. That's what that is. And instead of going, oh my God, the sky is falling, people are going, hey, wait a minute, this is BS. This doesn't track, this doesn't track, this doesn't track, here's a disconnect, here's a why. You know, these things are falling apart practically as soon as they start. And in some cases, they're being headed off at the pass by people who genuinely care about the country, who take their oaths of service and whatnot seriously, and you know, they're thwarting these things, too. So people are starting to wake up. The mass media are screaming bloody murder about certain things. Blithe statements by the White House and elsewhere are being challenged practically before they're even out there. And you know, I think we're going to see more and more of that. But you know, one of the ways you'll know for sure that the tide has shifted is if you see the media execute an about-face and really start doing what the media are supposed to be doing, which is to act as a watchdog on the government, not be in bed with the government, not hang out at the same country club, then go to Bilderberger meetings and not talk about what's said there. And that's a matter of documented fact, by the way. There are statements from the Bilderbergers going, oh, we want to thank the media for all the years of their, you know, circumspection and keeping our trust and all this stuff. Like, well, if you don't think the media are controlled, take a look at statements like that. Look at the concentration of ownership of the media, too. Now, but we're getting farther and farther afield. But the point is this. There is an unraveling occurring. We can argue about how fast it is and in what places it's occurring, but it's occurring anyway. And the faster things start to come unstuck, the greater the momentum becomes, the more things come unstuck, the greater the revelations, the more pressure to correct the problem, and on it goes.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about a possible imminent world economic collapse? I've been hearing a lot of rumors going about that.
I'm not awake nights worrying about it, but then that's one of the virtues of, living on a shoestring. Now, I don't have any multi-million dollar stock portfolio at risk. I live very leanly, shall we say. That's kind characterization. You know, people have been talking about this Nisara thing and debt forgiveness and all that. I haven't seen Nisara. They say these people have been arrested. I haven't seen any direct evidence of that either. Maybe these things are happening, but I haven't seen any evidence of it. No.
Yeah.
If there's going to be a complete economic meltdown, I personally doubt it. There are too many forces at work here that, in my opinion, would not allow such a thing to happen. It would be, you know, there's the old saying, if America gets the sniffles, the rest of the world gets the flu. You know, if things go completely down the tubes here, it's likely to take a lot of others with us.
Yeah. Well, John, why don't you give out your contact information then, since we're about to run out of time here, how they can access all your information, your website, and how they can order your books.
Well, all they got to do is go to my site, John Kettler, JohnKettler. You can do it with or without the www dot. Either way, you'll get there. Or you can just Google me, and you can find my site that way, too. The two e-books that I've already put out are there. If they go to Google News and type U.S. Spec Ops, or maybe even Spec Ops, you'll see the title of a book called U.S. Spec Ops Revealed. That's the press release. There's an embedded video in there. And I hope a matter of a few more weeks, we will have the thing substantially put to bed, and we'll start doing the promotion for the real release. The book will be out on Amazon, and we will be producing the full version on my site, which will have the Kindle version. It will have a PDF, which is much higher graphic quality than the Kindle version, and in very short order, I'll be starting to record the audio book. I will be reading the book. And there will be an audio file. I forget. I think it's an MP3, but I'm really not certain. But anybody with an interest in what's really going on in the world as far as what's happening behind the scene, how it's happening, I'll throw out a teaser. Is there or is there not a factual basis for the G.I. Jane character that Demi Moore portrayed? Something to think about. No, is there or is there not a connection between disclosure and some of the exotic special weapons that are being used or maybe developed? And do SEALs wear pantyhose, and if so, why?
You think disclosure will happen this year?
Disclosure is not an event, Eddie. Disclosure is a process. Disclosure has been going on for a very long time, and people don't even know it's been going on. That three-star general I told you about was invited to participate in the gradual release of information, and he refused to do it. I think he was forced out of his job as a result. Okay? There were government people directly involved with the production of Close Encounters of the Third Kind. There were government people directly involved with E.T. There were government people involved with a number of other things. This is all a form of disclosure. The beauty of putting these things out that way is if something breaks, they can say, oh, well, you know, you just got it from the movie or whatever. You know, they had abductions in there. They had Flight 19 in there, which, oh, by the way, my understanding is the people keeping the lid on the saucer thing were not happy about at all. You know, you get stuff like that. You get advisors on various things. I think that, you know, when that outfit put out that movie, The Philadelphia Experiment, the producer was so frightened he took his name off the credits. Really?
Okay,
oh.
You've got Final Countdown, where the Nimitz or whatever it is goes through a time portal and winds up in 1943. Well, this is very much like the Montauk experiment scenario, except this was supposedly a natural event. But let me tell you, the technology exists to teleport an aircraft carrier group. It's been done. It's been reported in open source, but you have to know how to understand the information you're being presented. If you don't know the technology exists, then you can read stuff and you won't even realize that's what you're reading. But it's been done.
You know, there are more and more movies, you know, coming out about, you know, the aliens, and, you know, a couple of recent ones just come out, you know, a Tom Cruise movie, Oblivion was one, and, they got another Star Trek movie just came out. There seems to be more and more of these movies addressing the theme of alien-human interaction, and alien invasion, and, you know.
Yeah. There was a new one that just came out not too long ago called Dark Skies. It was about abductees and stuff.
Oh, that was a TV series, yeah.
There was also a movie that just came out recently.
Oh, I didn't know that, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, like you say, disclosure is going on in a gradual, you know, pace there. Maybe it's becoming, you know, more accelerated.
there's stuff out there that people use day in and day out. They haven't a clue that it came from a UFO, okay? If you go read Philip Corso's Day After Roswell, he talks about how he took technology that was recovered from
Roswell
and other craft, and he was instructed by his boss, the head of Army Research and Development, General Trudeau, to take this stuff to industry and tell them, and ask us, okay, we got this thing. We may have think that we developed it, but here's the basic idea, guys. You know, take this idea, run with it. Here's the basis. You know, patent it, make it your own, and put it out there. So companies have gotten credit for doing amazing things that really they didn't do. The core technology or whatever it was seeded into those companies by military intelligence types operating behind the scenes. Now, Velcro is supposed to be one such technology.
Mm-hmm.
If you believe Corso, some of the night vision stuff, probably the FLIR stuff is derived from that. You've got really advanced material.
Yeah.
You know, where, for example, did Inconel X come from, which was the material that allowed the extra theme to fly at Mach 6? Where do some of these things come from? You know? I'm not saying Inconel X is an alien-derived material. I'm just throwing out the possibility that it might be. There are whole technologies, whole branches of science of which most of the scientists don't even know. Now, Bob Lazar talked about being read in on various sciences, and he said that they were deliberately kept close enough that you could transition people who were conventionally educated in physics to catch up and be able to operate in this. But if you did not have the briefings and whatnot, you would never get there from here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah.
And, you know, people say, oh, Bob Lazar was crazy and everything. They made it look crazy, but the things that he said were flying on Wednesday were flying on Wednesday, by golly. And when you watch them, you know, it jumps. Are we phasing out right now?
Yeah, we're about to fade out here. Thank you for a very engrossing interview, as always. And we're going to be following you closely now from now on and keep up with your website and your information, and we'll have you back on again in the near future. Now, I look forward to it. Thanks for your time.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Eddie and Justin.
Yes.
Good night to all of you out there.
Keep up the good work, man. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Good night.
And have a great evening.
Good night.
All right. You too.